started some time ago in the book of Revelation, in the 8th chapter. We began verse 6. We've gone all the way down through verse 7, all the way down to verse 12. We've talked about all the things in that period of time. This is a period of time known as the tribulation period. First, you're going to have an event with tremendous volcanic eruptions, with hail, fire, and brimstone that come down on the earth. Then you're going to have volcanic eruptions in the midst of the sea. Then you're going to have a great comet named Wormwood that comes down and strikes the earth. And we've covered all that in great detail over the past several weeks. So while all this is going on, the atmosphere above the earth that God made is receiving an awful lot of what they call hygroscopic nuclei, impurities, smoke, volcanic impurities, volcanic smoke, if you will. And there's a gradual transformation of it. I went into Revelation 8 and 12 and explained precisely what that meant last Sunday night, or last Wednesday night. And I talked about the way that God made the Earth's atmosphere. God made the Earth's atmosphere where as you go up, as you go straight up, the temperature is erratic, but in general, it decreases, meaning the air is colder as you go along. So anything that's heated down here on the surface rises. But up in a high atmosphere, up in what they call the stratosphere, somewhere it varies between about as low as 30,000 feet, as high as 60,000 feet. All of a sudden, all over the earth, there's a place where the temperature suddenly starts to increase. This isn't theoretical, it's a fact. Well, when you're trying to get air to rise to air that's warmer than it is, it won't. It just sinks. It's called a tropopause inversion. And during the tribulation period, you're going to have thousands of volcanic eruptions going on all over the earth. God has made the earth such that the only way you can force smoke through that temperature inversion is if you have a volcanic eruption on the surface and boom, the upward impetus, power, force of the volcano throws it right up through the tropopause layer. And it gets above the tropopause layer in what's known as the stratosphere. Now, every day down here, you see clouds form, and you see how they suddenly appear out of nowhere. Our Earth's atmosphere has quadrillion, trillion, innumerable numbers of little tiny hygroscopic nuclei that are lighter than air. And the way a cloud forms, it condenses on those little particles. Pretty soon, you see the clouds. If you continue to lift the air, the particles turn into raindrops. The cloud can't sustain them, and they fall to the earth. That's true below the tropopause level, but that's not true in the stratosphere. Once you get above the tropopause level, if you blow volcanic smoke up through it, there's no moisture up there for the smoke particles to have moisture condensed on them. So they can't become heavier, and they just continue to float around in the jet stream wind and mix around the whole earth. To show you how it works, the eruption occurred here in Mount Pinatubo. And after the eruption occurred, on the fourth week, it came all the way over and spread across Africa and all the way across the Panama Canal Zone. By the end of the sixth week, it had spread all the way across past South America and had passed on into the Pacific. By the end of the 12th week, it had covered the entire central equatorial belt. And if you had been down underneath this and looked up, you wouldn't have been able to see the sun. During the tribulation period, you're going to have thousands and thousands of eruptions like that. God has made the earth such that once it blows above the tropopause level, it takes a long, long time for it to get out. It says, and the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. So what is the heaven? Well, when you look up in the day and you see the sun, you say, there's the heaven. And if you have a cloud between you and the sun, then the heaven departs. You don't see it anymore. At night, you see all the stars. And you look up and you say, there's the heaven. But if the stars all disappear from your view, they disappear and depart like a scroll. So let me define this word, departed. It's past tense when this was written. It means that I am in the act of departing. I'm still in the act of departing. I have not yet departed. I'm still in the act of departing. I am about to depart. And I have departed. That's what he's saying. He's saying that what they call the heaven, the sun, moon, and the stars, disappeared from their view. And it gives you an example of how it happened. It wasn't something that happened suddenly. It was something that happened over a period of time. And he used the illustration of a Hebrew scroll, which is the first earthquake in the book of Revelation. Revelation 6:12 is the very first earthquake. It's the opening of the sixth seal, the very first one. And it tells you that the heaven starts disappearing from view. And as it's a simile, it means in a certain manner, like a scroll, a Hebrew scroll. So let's take a look at a Hebrew scroll. This is a young man, age 13, doing his first mitzvah. And he's reading certain passages, particularly from Deuteronomy. And he's looking down at a Hebrew scroll, which is his bar mitzvah. And this is what he's looking down at. This is a Hebrew scroll. Now you read, and then you roll. You read and you roll. And finally, when you get to the very end of the scroll, and all of it on one side is finished, it rolls together. And all that's in here, all the writing, disappears from view. That's what he's doing, John is doing, when he tells you about this. Now, this is the first earthquake in the book of Revelation. You won't find one before it. This occurs with about 3.5 years left to go in the tribulation period. And lo, when it opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together. Now, when he says the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, this is on the first earthquake. Whenever you have a volcanic eruption, and the initial edge of the cloud from it comes over you, the sun does not completely disappear. The central portion of it is blackened, but you can see a bright edge around it, just like you could through a negative if you were looking through it. And at night, when the first thin edge comes over you, it doesn't completely disappear, but it does turn a beautiful blood red. There's no more effective lithometer in the Earth's atmosphere that God made that will make the moon blood red than a volcanic lithometer. This is the first earthquake in the book of Revelation. It's on the opening of the sixth seal. Then you have the opening of the sixth seal. There's another great earthquake. Then you have seven trumpets, lots of earthquakes. Then you have seven vials of wrath. And here's the last earthquake, lots of earthquakes in the trumpets and vials. So during this period of time, lots of volcanic eruptions are occurring all over the earth along all these red lines. These red lines produce over 95% of all the world's earthquakes, and they produce over 90% of all the world's volcanic eruptions that spit the clouds, the volcanic clouds, up above the tropopause level in the stratosphere. During this period of time, from the opening of the sixth seal through all the trumpets and all the vials, you're going to have thousands of volcanic eruptions occurring, and they're going to blow above the tropopause level, and you're going to have a gradual buildup by the time of the Battle of Armageddon, where nobody's going to be able to see the sun and the moon at all. That's when the departing takes place, It's a gradual thing. And on the opening of the sixth seal in the first earthquake, you start to have volcanic eruptions. They're clearly visible on land. It takes a while for them to build up along these cracks and come up above the surface of the water. But by the time of the opening, but by the blowing of the fifth trumpet, you'll have chains of volcanoes all along the tectonic plate boundary, all along those red lines you saw earlier, both on land and sea. You'll be having thousands of volcanic eruptions produced by the power of God, both in the ocean and on land. 2/3 of these cracks are on the ocean seafloor. 1/3 is on land. Now, I described how it would happen during a particular time period. The first earthquake occurs with about 3.5 years left to go in the tribulation period. You won't find one in the book of Revelation before that. It's on the opening of the sixth seal in Revelation 6:12. Once that goes off and a little bit of time passes, you won't have a complete cloud shroud around all the earth. If you were standing right here at point X and the sixth seal has occurred, the first earthquake, within a matter of a month or two, this is the scenario you would have. Let's say you were standing here at point X. This moisture is being blown above the Copepalt level in the stratosphere. There's no moisture there for it to condense out of, and it normally takes months, even years, for it to get out of there. So you're right here. If the scenario looks exactly like this at the particular instant in time, all this is moving, but if you just froze it, if you look straight up, you could see the sun during the day and the moon and stars at night. But if you kept standing there, and this will be a moving thing, during the daytime, pretty soon this gap in here would close up and the leading edge of this cloud would come across it. I guarantee you, any time the leading edge of a volcanic cloud starts spreading in, it's thin, and it makes the sun look like you're looking through a negative, black as sackcloth of hair. Sackcloth of hair means goat's hair. You can still tell the sun's there, but the whole central part of it darkens. And I guarantee you, if it were at night, it would start to blot out the stars, and I guarantee you the moon would turn blood red. Now let's shift back to the daytime. Pretty soon after this thin edge passed over you, the sun wouldn't look like a negative anymore from a camera. You wouldn't be able to see the sun at all back here in this thick part. And at night, you wouldn't be able to see the moon at all, and you wouldn't be able to see any of the stars. However, this cloud would then pass on across, and you'd have another little gap. Then you'd go through the same scenario I just described here. Then you'd have another little gap. Same scenario, another little gap. Same scenario, another little gap. Same scenario, another little gap. In other words, you'd be able to see the sun, the moon, and the stars about 2/3 of the time, and about 1/3 of the time, you wouldn't be able to see them. Now, by the time you came to the last vial in the book of Revelation, which is the final earthquake at the Battle of Armageddon, this is what you'd have. One great, tremendous cloud shroud around the entire earth. It would gradually close all the gaps, and there would be one gigantic cloud. And when Jesus came back, he would have to pass through a cloud. No matter where he came down, he would have to come through a cloud, which is what the Bible indicates. Now, if you take all of the prophecies concerning this gradual buildup, right here is the end of it when the Lord Jesus Christ returns. This is following the Battle of Armageddon. And he tells what's going to be happening in the heavens where the sun, moon, and stars exist before this final event. There shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars. That's the heavens. And upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity to see in the ways roaring. Men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and glory. That's the very end of the tribulation period. That's the end of the Battle of Armageddon. Now let's go back to where we started. Way back in Revelation 6, some 15 chapters before this, we have the beginning of the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period. This is the first earthquake in Revelation 6:12. This is where the sun begins to take on the appearance of looking through a black negative. It's black as sackcloth of hair. It's like looking through a black goat's hair. And the moon became its blood. The moon takes on a blood-red color. It's a blood-red moon. But it's still visible. Now, let's move up two chapters. Let's go up to Revelation 8. And the fourth angel sounded, and a third part of the sun was smitten, a third part of the moon, a third part of the stars. Now, that doesn't mean that God went to the sun and said, wham, I'm going to knock a third part of you out. It doesn't mean he went to the moon and said, wham, I'm going to knock a third part of you out. It doesn't mean he went to each star and said, boom, 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 because there are jillions of them, and knocked one third of each star out. It means that the heavens were affected, signs in heaven, such that the day showed not for a third part of it, third part of the time you couldn't see the sun, and the night likewise. A third part of the night you couldn't see the stars and the moon. That's precisely and exactly what that means. Now notice we've moved from Revelation 6 to 8. Now let's jump up another chapter and let's notice what's happening here. Revelation 9 and 1. And the fifth angel sounded. Now by this time it's thickening up. And I saw a star fall from heaven to the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. Eclase tupriatos pace abusu, the key of the shaft of bitches that go down into the earth. And then the stuff really starts to pour out. It really intensifies, and it won't be too much longer until there will be very few breaks in it across the earth above the topaz level. And there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. So you can see that it's getting thicker and thicker, darker and darker, with the passage of time, more and more smoke is building up above the topaz level. God designed it that way. Now let's take a look at how it'll be at the very end of what we call the Battle of Armageddon, which is the last earthquake. Joel 3 and 11 through 15. Assemble yourselves and come, all you heathen. Gather yourselves together round about. Then it calls thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Let the heathen be awakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. For there will I set to judge all the heathen round about. This is a valley out in Israel. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get ye down, for the press is full. The vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. This is Armageddon. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. And notice verse 15. The sun and the moon shall be darkened. That means you will not see them at all. And the stars shall withdraw their shining. It means you will not see them at all. It means there'll be no break. The moon won't take on a blood-red color anymore. The sun won't look like you're looking through black goat's hair. You won't be seeing the sun, moon, or stars any time. It'll be one great, thick, complete cloud around the earth. God has designed, God made volcanoes. God made the topaz level. God made the stratosphere. God made the troposphere. And God put the moisture below the topaz level. And God didn't put much moisture above it. So everything that happens in the tribulation period, God made it. And everything functions together to fulfill his own prophecy by his own wisdom and his own wisdom. Revelation 6:12. And lo, when it opened the 6:12, the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of a hair, and the moon became as blood. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. This is when the tectonic plates began to move. Every mountain and every island on the surface of God's earth was firmly attached to the crust of the earth. Whether it be an island in the midst of the sea, which is nothing but a mountain with water around it, or whether it be a mountain on land with hard ground around it. All mountains and islands are the same. One surrounded by water, the other isn't. There are different types of mountains. They're igneous, metamorphic, and volcanic. But they are all attached to the crust of the earth. And when these huge tectonic plates move, the latitude and longitude of the ordinates in degrees, minutes, and microseconds across the surface of the earth changes. You're going to have the latitude and longitude of the ordinates of every mountain and island on the surface of the earth change. Not by a lot, but the microsecond coordinates will change. We're going to have the greatest holocaust the world has ever seen. This is the sixth seal, through seven trumpets and seven vials of wrath. And finally, at the last battle, after I say this reverently, all hell is breaking place for 3.5 years, you're finally going to have the greatest earthquake of all, a great earthquake, because it was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. This is when the mountains and islands begin to ride as passengers on top of these plates as they move, and they move even now. And by the end of the tribulation period, every mountain will have fled away from its original set of longitudinal and latitudinal coordinates that it originally possessed back here in Revelation 6. And the mountains will not be found with the same set of latitudinal coordinates that they were back here when the greatest Holocaust that has ever occurred on the earth will have transpired. So what I've said thus far is this. The Bible indicates that these volcanic eruptions will be associated with the shifting of the tectonic plate. It began on the opening of the sixth seal and finally ends on the pouring out of the last vial. During that period of time, these volcanic eruptions all over the earth, both in the sea, on the track, the tectonic plate boundaries, and on land, will be producing countless numbers of volcanic eruptions that will be building a huge smoke cloud up above the tropopause in the stratosphere. This is Mount Pinatubo when it went off. And what I'm showing you is not fictitious. This is what happens when you have a volcanic eruption. According to Dr. Lowry Stowe, an atmospheric at science with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the cloud continues to spread out from the tropics, reaching from about 30 degrees north latitude down to about 50 degrees south latitude, as this article is written. The most serious long-term effect of the cloud is likely to be increased destruction of the ozone layer, which it is doing and has done. The ozone particles in Pinatubo's cloud cause the chlorine from man-made chlorofluorocarbons to become more reactive. And then the cloud from El Chicano's eruption, which was in Mexico, ozone was depleted by 10 to 15%. Predicting the severity of the cooling effect can be done simply by extrapolating from the effects of El Chicano's smaller cloud. After lying dormant for more than 600 years, Pinatubo let loose with a load of debris that is estimated to be 2 to 3 times that from Mexico's El Chicán eruption in 1982. El Chicán, the biggest eruption in 50 years, blew out at least 60 million tons of dust and gas. Measuring less than a micron across, these particles are so tiny that they would sail off for 3 to 4 years. Within 21 days, high-speed stratospheric winds had spread a thin layer of the refractive particles into a ring running clear around the equator. The blast, which has been equated with 2,000 to 3,000 Hiroshima bombs, threw millions of tons of sulfur dioxide, dust, debris, and ash miles in the atmosphere. And much of what went up won't come down for 3 or 4 years. All the burning oil wells in Kuwait don't hold a candle to it in terms of environmental impact. The Lord indicated that this cloud would form. He made the atmosphere such it would. We've had some that have occurred down over the South Pole at Mount Eusebius, and we didn't pick them up, and they surprised us completely. A huge cloud of volcanic debris stretching 13,000 miles across two oceans with the potential of altering the Earth's climate has atmospheric scientists buzzing with excitement. Its size, density, and location more than 13 miles above the planet have particularly intrigued these scientists. The cloud already has reduced sunlight, particularly over Hawaii, and appears on satellite pictures as a gray flight disk. Scientists say the cloud stretching from the Baja California along the Pacific and Indian Oceans to Saudi Arabia was formed from debris of the Chicano volcano in southeast Mexico. So we have been tracking a lot of these monster clouds. They're very real, fallout from angry volcano spread. We've had a lot of these volcanoes. All of them do basically the same thing. If they're a perfect volcanic eruption, they blow above the stratosphere. They blow into the stratosphere. This is a picture of one blown into the stratosphere that occurred down at St. Vincent. This is what it looked like initially. Believe it or not, when it occurred here, it was picked up by these winds, and by the time this occurred, it had moved from right here to right here and had expanded. That's what they do when they move away from the source area. They actually expand. This is the polar tropopause and the latitude tropopause and the tropical tropopause. Once you blow smoke up through that, by volcanic eruption, but perhaps the heaviest polluters of the stratosphere are volcanic eruptions. Lofting an ash cloud laden with sulfur dioxide, perhaps 12 miles, a major eruption can shroud an entire hemisphere in a veil of particles that reduces sunshine and lowers ground temperatures. Once aloft, high altitude polluters are assured a long stay, unruffled by the weather and vertical air mixing of the troposphere The stratosphere is cleansed by only one circulation pattern. While strong east to west winds blow the air of the stratosphere around the globe, a languid horizontal drift gradually carries both ozone and pollution toward the poles. I'm showing you all this not so much for overkill, but to let you know this is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. The tropopause is here, and once a volcanic eruption occurs, like the El Chocón in 1982, its vertical eruption aims straight at the tropopause. Atmospheric conditions together with the force of the blast enable it to penetrate that cold air barrier and enter the stratosphere. Blocking and diffusing sunlight, they may lower world temperature by a quarter of a degree Celsius or more in 1983. They did. Once you blow it above the tropopause level, it gets up there and it stays there for years. We're going to have a lot of eruptions. This is the largest one we ever had, Tambora in 1815. We had Krakatoa in 1883. You're going to have hundreds of eruptions like Tambora, probably thousands of eruptions like Krakatoa, and you're going to have a whole lot of minor eruptions, all of which will throw it into the Earth's atmosphere. Now, this is a tremendous earthquake, and this is associated with the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period. Zechariah 14:4. And his feet shall stand that day upon the Mount of Olives, which will support Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west, and there shall be a very great valley, and half of the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the south. This is the ripping open of the Jordan River Valley, which causes the two faults that go east-west through the Mount of Olives to suddenly collapse, form a Graben Rift Valley between the Mount of Olives, the two faults are there. And this earthquake is associated with the last 3.5 years of tribulation period. And you shall flee the valley of the mountain, for the valley of the mountain shall reach into Isaiah. Yea, you shall flee like as you fled before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. And the Lord my God shall come and all the saints with thee. I'll be covering that in much greater detail in the future. But notice verse 6. All this is associated with the last 3.5 years of tribulation period. Notice what he says. It shall come to pass in that day that the light shall not be clear nor dark. That's interesting. And it shall be one day which shall be known to the Lord, not day nor night, but shall come to pass at evening time it shall be light. That's interesting. So let's determine what the Hebrews meant when he used this expression. It shall come to pass in that day the light shall not be clear nor dark. If Zechariah, who wrote this, had gone out on a day where there were clear skies or scattered clouds, and the sun radiated straight down on him, he would have said, "Thank you, Lord, for this beautiful, clear light." It simply means that the sunlight between the individual and the sun is not restricted, and it's falling on him. He says, "The light shall not be clear." He said, "You're not going to have light like that." Remember, this is the last part of the tribulation period. He says, "You won't have any clear light." Now let's talk about what the Hebrew used for the expression dark. It meant that at night you went out and it was so dark, there was no moon, there were no stars, no light, you didn't even have a candle, and you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. It meant pitch dark. So here you have two extremes. You have beautiful clear light, or you have no light at all. It's not going to be clear. He said it won't be like that. But he said, on the other hand, it's not going to be pitch dark. Yesterday, when you got up in the morning, you could tell the sun was up, couldn't you? Because the light came into your room. There was pouring down rain, wasn't it? And when you looked outside, you could see your car in the driveway. You could see your yard. I could see the church building. But it sure wasn't clear light, was it? It was obstructed, wasn't it? But it was light. On the other hand, it wasn't pitch dark, was it? This terribly mystifying scripture. It's not terribly mystifying. That simply means a cloudy day. It simply means that all over the earth, it's going to be a cloudy day. And that's exactly what it means when it says the heaven departed as a scroll. Now, when the Lord returns at the end of the tribulation period, He'll come down. There'll be a great cloud throughout over the earth. And He'll have to pass through it. Now let's take a look at this. I know it's going to be a cloudy day all over the earth. I am absolutely positive of that. Now there's lots of scriptures I'm not absolutely positive about, but I'm absolutely positive what that means. It means all over the earth you're going to have a cloud around it. It's going to be a cloudy day everywhere. So how does that stack up with what He says next? God who made the atmosphere, they ought to make. This will be one day which will be known of the Lord, not day. Won't be broad daylight, nor night. Won't be pitch dark. No broad daylight, no night. What's that? Cloudy day. But it shall come to pass that at evening time it shall be light. Tonight at midnight, if you had a cloud out there, you wouldn't see the sun, would you? You wouldn't see the moon and stars, would you? It'd be dark. But this says that at midnight, all over the earth, there's going to be light. By the end of the tribulation period, that cloud will have built around the entire earth. It will be complete. It will be finished. It will have built into one huge, big, long, continuous cloud shroud. And it will look something like this when Jesus returns at the end of the tribulation period. You'll have light, but it won't be much. On the other hand, it won't be pitch dark. So when Jesus comes back, the end of the tribulation period, the end of the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period, I can explain the first part of that very well. It's very easy to explain. It won't be broad daylight anywhere. It won't be pitch dark anywhere. But the last part's tricky. And at evening time, it shall be light. Of what I'm going to show you, I'm absolutely certain. When God made the atmosphere, He made it of different density. You take a glass with water in it. You take and you put a pencil down in it. You stand back and look at that water and you'll swear it's broken off right there at the edge. It really isn't. That's called a refraction of light. It's because light travels slower in water than it does in the atmosphere. Water has a different density. It has a different optical density than the optical density of the air. And you get that effect when you look at it. The same is true if you take air, which is less dense than glass, and shine it through glass, which is more dense, it will bend. Always. God made the atmosphere basically the same way. This is water, this is air. You can make this out of space. You can make this outside the exosphere, outside what we call our atmosphere. The exosphere, which is the one above the troposphere, which is one above the stratosphere. It's very, very thin. Its density is very thin. But down here in the lower part, which is represented by the water, it's thick, the thick atmosphere. The optical density here is different from this one. When a light ray from a flashlight comes in from air to water, it's refracted, it's bent. The same is true when light rays come in from the sun to the earth. This light ray will be bent because this is optically more dense than the air. Had the light ray continued to travel in the medium of air, it would have gone on to reach the zone between 0.1 and 0.2. But because the law of refraction has been bent in the medium of water to land on the area between T3 and T4, Snell's law states, God makes laws, and they follow the same rule. This is Snell's law. We discovered it, but God made it. Whenever a ray of light passes from air into a more optically dense medium at some angle, the ray is bent in such a way that the ratio of the sine of the angle of incidence to the sine of the angle of reference is a constant. Refraction is the bending of light at the boundary between two mediums with different optical densities. The Earth's atmosphere, being more optically dense than outer space, causes the sun's rays to be bent around the Earth every morning and evening, allowing light to appear on the surface before the sun rises in the morning and after it sets in the evening. The great smoke cloud in the stratosphere will be thousands of feet thick, and as such, its optical density will cause a greater bending of light than now occurs. This increased bending will cause the sun's dim light to arrive earlier in the morning and remain later at night. Hence, all over the Earth, it will be dimly lighted at times when one would normally expect it to be dark. It will be light at night. Whenever you look down at a coin on the bottom of a glass of water, you swear the coin's on the side of the glass because of the optical bending, the law of refraction. Every day when the sun sets, you look out and you see the sun, and you see, I see the sun setting. But you're not really looking at the sun because the sun has already set. But its rays are coming to the atmosphere above you at high level, and they're being bent back, and you do see the sun, but you see the refracted and reflected image of it. That is the theory, it's the fact. The atmosphere is much more dense than the area between the sun and the outer fringe of our atmosphere. So you see the sun in the morning, you see the light from it long before you see the sun, and you see the light from the sun long after it sets. I've flown back many times from out in Texas, and as I've flown back, maybe I'd be flying along at, maybe 30,000 feet, sometimes 35,000. Be broad daylight up there. And I'd be flying out over Lubbock, Texas, coming back to California. Bright, brilliant light all over the plane, all on it, glaring in your eyes. You have to shut the side portals. But you could look down below you, and the Earth was dark. You could see thousands of little speckles of light. But up where you were, it was dark. It was bright sunlight. Down on the Earth, it was dark. And if there had just been a way that you could have taken that light and thrown it down from the plane to the Earth, well, that's called refraction. And the reason it was still light was because you were way up here. And down on the surface, it was dark. You were up here. Plenty of sunlight. But the sunlight wasn't striking over here. Let's take the sun at midnight and the Earth. The sun can't shine through the Earth, so it's pitch dark on the opposite side of it. How can that be changed? Put a shroud cloud around it. Increase the optical density of the shroud cloud. Normally, the light passes right on through. But you put a thick cloud on there, it'll deflect all of it, reflect it, and scatter it around on the opposite side of the Earth. And over there where you would expect it to be pitch dark, there'll be some light. During the tribulation period, when the sun shines into this great cloud that's going to form, it will be refracted and reflected around on the other side of the Earth, since it can't go through it, and it places in the evening where it should be dark, there's going to be some light. But down here with the sun shining directly through it, it's going to be light as it can be, but it won't be clear light. On the other hand, it won't be pitch dark. It'll be lighter here, but over there, you're going to have some light because it's been refracted around underneath the cloud. This isn't theoretical. This is what happened. The Soviets used it. The Soviets developed this thing where they put a huge mirror up in space, and a Russian space mirror brings a little sunshine to the night. The sun could come across, hit it, and go down and bring light to certain areas of the globe. This isn't anything that's unusual. Do volcanoes influence weather? Again, the 1883 of eruption in Krakatoa in the same area gave rise to astonishing atmospheric effects over a large part of the Earth for more than a year. In Europe, a strange light illuminated the night sky so that one could read a newspaper at midnight. This was caused by the diffusion of solar light by fine particles of ash in suspension at high altitude. That's precisely what you have. And during the tribulation period, where it says, it shall come to pass in that day that the light shall not be clear nor dark, I'll tell you precisely and exactly what that is. All over the earth, everywhere, you look up, and all you're going to see is a cloud. You talk about depression. You talk about physically and psychologically depression. Can you imagine to go through a period of about a year and not see the sun at all? I think that's what's going to happen. And I believe the Bible is quite clear that the Lord Jesus Christ is going to return in a cloud. And it is now 8:05. And tomorrow, not next Wednesday, Brother Trust is going to preach next Wednesday night. I'll be down in Hot Springs. And next Wednesday night after that, Lord willing, I'll show you how every single eye on the surface of the earth will see Jesus Christ come through a cloud over Jerusalem at precisely the same time when he makes his entrance. Every single eye. When I first came up with this, my degree is in chemistry and physics, but I don't have a doctorate degree in physics. And a man who'd worked on the Tennessee Valley Project, who had a doctorate degree, wrote me a nice thank you letter. He was a Christian, and said he had never been able to figure that out, but he said he had checked everything out. I said, tested it. He said it was true. The thing about all this that's so interesting is not the mechanics of it. It's not the cleverness of it. We believe God made the earth. He did. But God is not only all-powerful, able to make things. God is all-wise. And God made all these elements. He's the only one who owns, operates, and controls them. And when he talks about things in the tribulation period, he's working in the framework work of his own roof. But only he can do it. And so this gives me a lot of added confidence. If God can do this and plan a universe and bring all these prophecies to fulfillment by his own power, then what do I have to worry about when I have to face obstacles and problems and troubles? You think our troubles are very large, but they aren't, because we have the Lord. And if we have this Lord, and we do, they're great. So Sunday night, Huggy Bear, I want you